So we'll learn two Mesha Chachmas today on Parshas Chukas. Two fascinating Mesha Chachmas. One about the type of water that came out, and one about Moshe's Chait. Each very, very creative and very novel. So, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers the instructions to Moshe and Aaron, Kach es mahamata, v'hakel es ha'ida, ata v'aron achicha, gather everyone, v'dibartem el ha'sela, v'nasan me'mav, and the rock, the boulder, will produce water, me'mav. Yet, when Moshe redirects the process, instead of speaking, he hits, the Torah describes, v'yar Moshe es yado, v'yach es ha'sela b'matehu pa'mayim, Vayetsu Mayim Rabim, a lot of water came out. So the initial description is only water. And the actual scene is a lot of water. So Mesha Chachma is a fascinating idea. Ideally, when we receive a Kodesh Baruch Hu's supernatural assistance, it is always more elegant and more spiritually transcendent to receive a little bit and to have that go a long way. Qualitative, not quantitative. We tend to think in quantitative terms, size and how much and mass. But ideally, v'achaltem lachmachem lasova. Ideally, you should receive very little from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it should go a long way. And that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's original plan. The original plan was there should be very little water, just like there was, or just enough to, as is necessary. But that should provide satiation and cooling and drinking. And that was the original plan. And whatever Moshe's Chait was, and in this piece of Mesha Chachma didn't discuss Moshe's Chait, because it wasn't as supernatural as HaKadosh Baruch Hu had intended, so it was a gush of water and a torrent of water. But that wasn't the ideal. And he quotes many, many psukim throughout Tanakh that the ideal is that Hashem should provide less, possibly just as much as you need, as we saw, let's say, by the Mun, where they collected exactly what they needed. We think more is opulent and it's lavish. And that was the original plan. And unfortunately, the plan got short-circuited, and that's why Vayetsu Mayim Rabim. Now, the fascinating question is why? Why is it preferable for Hashem to provide less, just the amount you need, and not more and too much? Why is it more preferable? You were thinking it's more preferable to fall into this huge pool of water and have endless, endless drink available, and Baruch Hu meets it out. So I think there are three reasons, two of which he speaks about, but I can think about a third. One is zoological, one is moral, and one is more theological. The zoological part is that animals spend most of their day eating, foraging for food, gathering food, eating food, digesting food. Most of the day is spent food pursuit, and human beings are meant to spend their days on spiritual. And it's not just a spiritual statement, it's also a question of elegance. The word Tzelem Elokim, what does it mean to be Tzelem Elokim and spend 18 hours a day trying to find your food? That's where we're literally at the top of the food chain, right? Where the trees capture the energy from the sun, trees and the vegetation, and then herbivores eat that vegetation and transform it into meat. And that takes, you know how long elephants have to eat? Imagine elephants are herbivores. Can you imagine if you were an elephant and you couldn't eat energy-packed, what we call meat, energy-packed food? Elephants have to spend so much time eating and digesting and redigesting and trying to draw as much energy as they can for their big bodies out of small little energy packets that the vegetation creates from the sun. And then meat has more energy, and certain animals eat other animals, or we eat meat. So we sit down, we eat 20 minutes here, half an hour there. Hashem doesn't want human beings to sink to the level of animals. And here's all the water you need. Very, very economization of eating. Hashem wants to economize our eating because it's what sets us apart from animals. Now, of course, the musar here to think about is not to question how much you eat, but we're closest to the animal kingdom when we eat. That's where the two times in our life, the three times in our life that we're closer to being animals than we are to being angels are when we eat, when we procreate, and when we relieve our wastes. That's why in those three areas in life, it's important to approach them with dignity. Now, going to the bathroom, dignity is obvious. You know, we do it in a private way. We don't just go in the middle of some tree. But it is important. I see a lot of boys, when they come to yeshiva, they're not aware. When you're in the bathroom, when you're taking care of your needs, you shouldn't be talking. You shouldn't be schmoozing with people. It's a quiet moment. And the silence and the quiet protects their dignity. So it's not a place you should be talking or yapping it up or drinking a thing. Instead of going to an airport, guys going to is relieving himself by holding a beer in his hand. You should be very, Chazal are very careful about how they conducted themselves in the bathroom. Now, obviously, the same thing with procreation, with sexual interaction. There were private for other reasons, not just to protect their dignity, but in addition to that, because it's a personal moment of intimacy. We don't want to flash it, we don't want to share with other people. Now, when you eat, it's not so much privacy, although there's privacy also. So you don't want to eat with people looking at you. You don't want to eat in the street and walk again. Every once in a while, I can take a drink. Today, there's a lot of different food. But the notion that you're carrying, I don't know, a hamburger with the onions coming out of one side and the ketchup coming out, just walking down the street munching on your hamburger, that's not sneas. People think that sneas is just for women, and sneas is just how long your clothing is. You want, okay, you want to take a snack, a chocolate bar, some food, potato chips, a drink, ice cream. These are all things that are appropriate to eat. But you should be walking down the street, munching down on a piece of pizza. Go off to the side and eat quietly, because that's when you have to protect your dignity as a human being. So Hashem is saying, when I give you food, I mean, I don't want you to be like animals, just endlessly gorging and trying to catch up with yourself. You need a dignified manner. The dignified manner, I'm going to give you just what you need, and the bracha is going to be more internal. Okay. The second reason is, he doesn't talk about this, but there's a natural human tendency for more. I want more, I want more, I want more. And it's worse in most vulgar form. It's greed. I want more money, I want more money, I want more possessions. In many, many modern forms, it's addiction. One of the drugs of addiction is, I want more, I want more, I want more drugs, I want more and more gambling high, I want more and more sexual stimulations. We're always wanting more. And part of it is with food. People, when they see food, they see these endless spreads of food, they go a little crazy, and so much food here, and it awakens very, very ugly tendencies of grabbing and gorging and taking more than you need. You see this when you're in hotels and when you're, I have a rule, I won't wait online for food. It's just, okay, so I'll eat what everyone else isn't waiting online. I was waiting for the meat normally, so I'll either wait for it to die down or take something else. I just feel like it's feeding on my worser passions. I want those worser passions to come to me to the fore. So I work hard and I always succeed, but I want the food to get the better of me. Worked very hard on that. Every shiur would end at 1:30, and we'd walk into the lunchroom starving, because in those days they didn't have cafeteria style. We just put out some food, and by 1:30 there's no food left. And he really drilled into us not to be a slave to our stomachs, and have this visceral, innate dislike for running after food and being too excited about food. And you eat it, you enjoy it. A member of Rav Aaron was once horrified. He read in the New York Times, there's a review of different airline foods. Who are the best airline food? He couldn't imagine why anyone would care. You're not getting on a plane for the food. That's obviously not true today. Most of the many, many people get on the planes for food and choose the planes based on the food and the level of food, especially choose less so, because choices. You eat the same food whether you're on Delta or whether you're on South African Airlines or Qantas, you're eating the same prepackaged food. But it's the same difference. But so the second reason that Shem doesn't want all these gross, selfish, grabbing, aggressive, greedy passions to come to the fore. Here's what you need. Of course, there's not just a zoological component that we're different from animals and we preserve our dignity, and a moral component. There's also a spiritual component that when you receive from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers exactly what you need and telegraphs it and provides this matana, It's one thing where I say, you know, oh, come into my house and the food is all there and just take what it is. They're saying, here, I prepared this for you, and it has a spiritual component that obviously less is more, because it is laden with spiritual content. So even though you're eating less, not just what you need, but conceivably even less than you need, we're reminding ourselves that health is not just based on biology and nutrition and science and medicine, and health is based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Rofecha. So in theory, Hashem should just give you a little pill. And we're all going to have pills, energy pills, divine energy pills. So Hashem will give you a pill, you'll eat it, and you won't have to eat it at all. And again, it's a little scary, because for some of us, eating is such a release, and it's psychologically cathartic, and we're all for eating. But it's a very interesting Meshech Chachma about eating and drinking. Again, don't take this too dramatically. At your age, eating is healthy, and enjoying eating is healthy, and it's a social experience. But just think about the process and the experience of eating. And again, I'm commenting and editorializing a lot, but the core is the Meshech Chachma. Okay, the second Meshech Chachma, equally interesting. Interesting as the 40 quotes, and I'll do a little bit more speedily. Meshech Chachma. What was the sin of Moshe? So here's his own mahalach, and I spoke about this a couple years ago. that this was meant to be a second Har Sinai, where it's all about voices rather than visuals, rather than optics. Hashem is an optical. It's like you only heard voices at Har Sinai, meant to be prayer, meant to be davening. But that was one approach. But he quotes Rabbi Yosef Alba. Anyone know who Rabbi Yosef Alba was? So Alba was a very interesting 14th century, early 15th century Spanish disputant. We all think that the Spanish Inquisition just happened. 1492, Ferdinand Isabella woke up. It's probably about 130 years of real suffering, anti-Semitism, pogroms, and a lot of disputations of Judaism versus Christianity. This is the great period of disputation. Barcelona, so the Ramban, the great disputation in the 12th century. So this is a great age of disputation, and he was involved in one of the big and famous disputations. Was it in 1414? Something like that. It's a Talmud of Kraskas. And anyway, so after the disputation, of course, all these disputations ended the only way they could end in medieval Europe, with Christianity on the upper hand. The verdicts were already handed in before the trial began. Judaism, there's no way they could triumph. You know, it was like a communist era trial. The verdict was already predetermined. There was a lot of frustration and depression amongst the Jews, and at least at this stage, many of them were converting to Islam, to Christianity, excuse me, after this failed dispute. So he wrote a sefer called Sefer HaYikarim, which he collected many of his counterclaims just to try to give people. So it's an interesting medieval theological work. So Rabbi Yosef Alba writes on Moshe Schait as follows. Very interesting. He says that, he writes very briefly, the Meshech Chachma elaborates. I'm not going to, right now, given the limited time, what he writes about the Meshech Chachma. Based on Rabbi Yosef Alba, Meshech Chachma says as follows, that the regular MO of a Navi is that you make decisions without divine instructions, and Hashem responds because these are real needs for the Jewish people that the Navi has intuited. So when Eliyahu goes up to Har HaKarmel, for example, and he realizes he has to make a stand, he has to make a display against these false Nevi'im, he doesn't receive any instructions from Hashem, even though he's, as it were, suspending Halacha as a Rasha, offering the carbon outside of the Mishkan at that point. And he's also creating some public display. The fire should come on his carbon, shouldn't come on the other carbon. Did Hashem tell him? No. But that's how Nevi'im roll. The Nevi'im sense needs, and Hashem responds, and that's the Kiddush Hashem. So Kiddush Hashem, this partnership between human beings and Nevi'im, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there for a Navi and is part of history and is listening in on our events, and he knows when he's called upon for miracles. So the Navi invokes Hashem, and Hashem responds. And that's the Kiddush Hashem. The problem is Moshe couldn't follow that MO. Because if Moshe would have taken initiative in all the miracles he performed, people would have mistook him for a demigod. Because he was just so impressive. And he wasn't just so impressive in the level of miracles. Listen carefully. when other Nevi'im delivered prophecy, the Rambam writes about this, they went into a almost hypnotic stage where they lost consciousness, and it was an outer body experience. And it was very, very clear that these Nevi'im were not just gods or demigods, because they were just vehicles for the divine word. When the divine word is delivered through you, you lose your identity. You just become a mouthpiece. You become possessed. So when Eliyahu, who had delivered so many Nevuos, would then get up on Har HaKarmel and say, here it is, the fire is coming down, no one's going to say he's God. He's a Navi. We just saw him speaking a few minutes ago, the word of Hashem, and he couldn't even stand. He had to fall down, he had to lie down and go to sleep, and he spoke in riddles. He was like talking through his eyes. His eyes were all in the back of his head. He's Eliyahu, he's a Navi, and he's made a decision. And look at a Kiddush Hashem, that even a human being who skunks out divine, and skunks out historical needs, Hashem responds. Moshe couldn't play that role. Because if Moshe would have initiated miracles, after they just saw him speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu freely, like, you speak to me, pal, pal, darabo, they'd say, oh, this Moshe, he's a partial God. Look at the miracles he's performing. So Moshe always had to be letter of the law, line by line instructions from Hashem. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed me. To a fault sometimes. Sometimes some of the complaints he had against Moshe, why this, why that, he says, I'm not doing anything. I am just following orders. Moshe had to sublimate, had to subjugate his own identity in miracle performance so that people were not mistaken for a God. He had to make himself less as opposed to the other Nevi'im. That all happened before Parshas Korach. This is all history. Other Nevi'im took initiative, created a great Kiddush Hashem. Moshe didn't have that luxury because it would create theological confusion. Now, what happens? What changes in Korach? In Korach, they're making fun of Moshe. They're saying, Moshe, you're a manipulator. Moshe, you're an exploitationist. Moshe, you're power hungry. Moshe, you're crass. Moshe, you're scheming. So then, at that point, Moshe is not afraid they're going to mistake him for a god. He'd be lucky if they don't stone him. At this point, no one's going to say, oh, Moshe, you're a god. They're whispering amongst the camp that he's mendacious and malicious and two-timing and two-faced. And they've got a lot of really bad things to say about Moshe and Korach. At this point, he says, okay, you know what? Now I can play the normal role of a Navi. Now I can just summon an earthquake without Hashem instructing him. Remember, Hashem didn't give him any instructions about the earthquake. Moshe called the earthquake into being, like Eliyahu Navi, like some of the other Nevi'im that I won't go into right now. So at this point, Moshe already passed the Rubicon. Moshe already is beyond being suspected of being a god. Now Moshe can play the role of a Navi. He can just call into action whatever needs. He feels Am Yisrael needs at that point, and he doesn't have to wait for Hashem's instruction. So why doesn't he do it at this point? The chait was not hitting the rock. The chait was he should have just taken the initiative to just go over to the rock and draw water without waiting for divine instruction. Because that's the higher level of Kiddush Hashem, that Hashem is attentive to history, and Hashem responds to human solicitation. That's how the other Nevi'im operated. Moshe could never operate that way because of fear of being confused with a god. But this is post-Korach. This is a new generation now in Kukas. This is people who are no longer going to think of him. They haven't seen Mitzrayim. I'm adding this. They haven't seen Mitzrayim. They didn't see Kriyas Yamsuf. No one's going to think Moshe's a god. He'd be lucky if they don't stone him. So the ideal should have been not hitting the rock and not speaking to the rock, but not waiting for Hashem and rather just initiating, we need water. Hashem, we need water. Speak to the rock. And at that point, it would have spoken to, not the rock, but to Hashem. Hashem, we need water. Please bring the water from the rocks. It's a very, very different view of Moshe. And the highlight is, how are you Mekad Hashem Shemayim? By following, waiting for Hashem to intervene, or by initiating, even if Hashem doesn't give, it's a very, very deep redemptive theory. Some people say, we can't really start the Geula on our own because we have to wait for Kodesh Baruch Hu. That'd be a bigger Kodesh Hashem. The core of this is, no, it's a bigger Kiddush Hashem. Human beings take initiative, and Hashem responds to human beings' initiatives. This is at its heart. It's a very interesting, redemptive Meshech Chachma about how Hashem plays in history. So two different Meshech Chachmas. One Meshech Chachma about eating, and it was meant to be less rather than more, with satiation, with gratification, with fulfillment, nutrition. The other is about Moshe not being able to play the normal Navi role because of fear of being theologically confused with God, but at this point he doesn't have that concern anymore, and he shouldn't have waited for divine instruction. Was it hitting or speaking? He just should have gone to the rock and performed a miracle. I would have been there for you and responded. Okay? Everyone is welcome to continue, but you made it through the week. Shagach. Okay, have a good day, everyone. Have a good day.